Let's just double check and make sure we're not missing somebody for item five. I don't think we are, but.
Well, let's see. Item five
was the waste plastics and watersheds. I don't think we have any cards up here.
Did anybody come specifically to see the video on plastics in the ocean?
Okay.
There's a hand.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we will do it tomorrow.
Can we do it first thing?
And is it a,
how long does it take?
It's about 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
We can do it first thing.
Okay.
Can you be here first thing in the morning?
8:30.
Okay.
Okay.
Today.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Bring the popcorn.
Yeah. Bonbons.
Bonbons. Okay. No butter, please. All right. This is public forum. We'll allot 3 minutes to each speaker. Sarah Newkirk. Let's see. Have we attempted to bunch these, Roger, into
I had the harbor ones first.
You did. Okay. Well, Sarah, you're here. Are you going to address the harbor issue or something else?
The harbor?
Okay.
Guess not.
Evidently not. Okay.
Would you like to?
I can make something up.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, Chairman Young and members of the board, this is a timber issue, but not the agenda item that you just took. Oh. My name is Sarah Newkirk, and I represent the Ocean Conservancy, and I wanted to take this opportunity to comment on the board's ongoing policy of permitting, this is expressed in a couple separate letters, of permitting harvesting without a waiver or WDRs under certain circumstances. On October 21st, 2004, staff issued the first letter on this subject, and the letter contained a largely correct description of the board's authority with respect to water quality regulation, specifically that if there's no discharge, the board doesn't have any authority. However, the letter went on to prescribe certain specific activities that timber harvesters could carry on that were assumed to result in no discharge. The letter specifically stated that, quote, felling trees outside the Wilpez using hand crews, hand-operated chainsaws, without heavy equipment and without soil disturbance activities may cause insignificant increased erosion. We understand that any proposed winter operations would be done in this manner, low impact, and would cause an insignificant increase in erosion. After my colleagues strenuously objected to this letter, staff issued several follow-up letters intended to clarify the first letter, but the fundament remained the same, that some timber harvest activities, the ones described above, could be expected to result in no discharge and therefore were outside the board's authority. There are two things wrong with this. The first is a matter of fact. We don't agree that trees can be cut, particularly in the winter, and not cause discharge. As the letter itself conceded, canopy reduction can be expected to result in increased sediment runoff. The only real question is how much. In other words, the letter's prescription for avoiding the need for a waiver is factually inaccurate. Second, there's a matter of policy. This action by the board has the effect of shifting the burden to the public to prove that discharge is occurring when a harvester operates. Under the policy set forth in the letter, the timber companies could simply assert that their activities were not causing discharge, and it would be incumbent on the public to find some way of proving that they were. This would be virtually impossible, since in most cases the harvests are occurring on private lands. Now, the harvest may be occurring on private lands, but the water quality impacts are public. The public has a right to have its waters protected from the activities of dischargers and should not be burdened with an evidentiary showing every time an activity threatens those waters. Timber activities should be assumed to result in discharge, and the burden should be on those proposing the activity to demonstrate that they will not. Accordingly, we ask you to retract this policy unequivocally. If, however, over our objections, you decide to continue to permit some timber harvesting operations under certain circumstances without a waiver or a demonstration that discharge will not result, the board should, at an absolute minimum, require that the board and the public be notified if these kinds of activities are occurring without waivers or WDRs. Thank you, and I'd take any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Brian Foss, followed by Barbara Carleen.
Good afternoon, and thank you for staying late. I'm Brian Foss. I'm the port director at Santa Cruz Harbor. And Kim, why don't you go over there, and maybe the public can see it. As you know, our North Harbor, some of you firsthand, suffers from severe shoaling, and that is a product of sedimentation from our Aranda Gulch watershed. Damage to the harbor is in the approaching the $2 million range in cost of dredging, cost of replacing docks, and cost of dredging. The sediment is all tested clean. It is a good deal of it is fine grain, which means we have limited dredging opportunities. I'm here really to thank the staff and the Water Board for supporting a very creative permit and allowing us to do a limited amount this year. I want you to know that we have a long-term solution for this. We have a watershed management plan to stop erosion, to restore the watershed, and we're very heavily involved with that. In terms of dredging, next fall we'll propose a demonstration project 2. We've done one already in 2001, which will eliminate all the conflicts that we have with recreational use and show, again, that sand, silts, and clays placed in the near shore at the right time go to their historic and respective areas of repose and recharge valuable habitats. The State of California Department of Boating Waterways is supporting us on this financially, oceanographically. We have third-party contract. It's very highly scientifically monitored. And you should also know that the California Sediment Management Project, sponsored by the California Ocean Protection Act, puts this as a very high priority. They are coming to help us with this project because they want to advance the science, and our project will do that. So you should look forward to that, and we've already started working with your staff to make that happen. So hopefully we'll have good news for you inside 9 or 10 months. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Barbara Carleen, followed by Hank Curitan, and then Bob Taylor.
Hi, my name is Barbara Carleen. I'm Secretary Treasurer of Friends of the Harbor Group. We're a recently formed organization who's basically become frustrated over the sediment filling up the harbor. These are letters that were collected in the last few days asking for help get this mud out to its little sand dab grounds and its little Dungeness crab grounds, because the damage to our boats, our property, some people, these are their homes. These are all slips that are completely, totally unusable. I had some photos that I've left at home that show expensive vessels sitting in mud that are severely damaged. Our docks are being broken. Our lives are just being decimated by this silt. This has nothing to do with anyone in the harbor. This is coming from forces beyond our control, and we are being punished for it. And so this basically, I have a copy of a letter that we're taking to Senator or Congressman Sam Farr asking for help. We appreciate what you're trying to do. We hope that, to follow up on what Brian said, that we can alleviate the sediment problem, put the mud back out where it's always been. The sand dabs and the Dungeness crab will thank you for it, because they love it out there. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Did you want to?
Okay. Mr. Curitan?
No, this is
the same. Bob Taylor, and then Barbara Schweffel.
Good evening. My name is Hank Curitan. I'm also with Friends of the Harbor Group in Santa Cruz. I'm actually here to thank all of your efforts to try to help us with this dredging activity. And with that, I think the pictures that were shown are just is a good example of just how bad the sediment is. It really turns out that we did some pictures in June with a minus 1.8 tide, and it wasn't bad at all. And the pictures you saw here were taken Monday on a minus 1.4, and it is unbelievable, the difference. So we are seeing some major changes. So anyway, thank you very much for your help, and I'll try to cut my 3 minutes short. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? I probably should ask this to Brian. It seems to me some meetings back that you made a presentation to this board about your sediment and your dredging issue. And it brings to mind that you brought up an issue about toxic chemicals in your dredging. Do you have toxic chemicals?
We have a few that are elevated, but not to levels of concern where EPA or even your staff would say they're not suitable for ocean disposal.
Because I think it kind of left in my mind that you had, and I was trying to relate it to my problems at Moss Landing as you're having in Santa Cruz. I know we don't have any golf balls, but you surely do.
We are talking to the city about their golf balls.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
But you did clear up that point. Thank you very much.
Okay, Bob Taylor.
Chairman Young, members of the board, my name is Bob Taylor. While I am president of one of the homeowners associations in Las Palmas Ranch, I am here today as an individual resident of Las Palmas. I am here to ask for your help and direction in dealing with the real possibility that there will be a spill from the Las Palmas treatment plant storage ponds into our storm drain system and then into the Salinas River. Las Palmas Ranch is a 1,000-home subdivision located on River Road. If you go this way directly across the river, that's where we are. The development includes a tertiary treatment plant and two storage ponds, and it's dedicated to the treatment and recycling of the effluent from Las Palmas. The recycled water is discharged by spray irrigation on the landscaping, mostly turf, located variously in both phases of the development. The development of Las Palmas is now complete, with all of the homes sold and occupied. The existing WDR for the treatment plant and spray fields is your Order 9114. Included in your findings for that order is the following statement. The spray irrigation areas have been sized for an average daily flow of 195,000 gallons per day and comprises an area of approximately 41 acres. And I ask you to keep 41 acres in mind. Recent engineering studies undertaken at my insistence now indicate that the system requires upwards of 50 acres. The reality is that we have less than 27 acres, or 50% of what the system is supposed to have and what the homeowners were entitled to expect when they purchased their homes. The staff report for Order 9114 said the system would minimize the threat of runoff through conservative application rates and positive controls. It is not physically possible to discharge 100% of the water on 50% of the required acreage using anything even remotely resembling conservative application rates. As a result, the storage ponds, which are supposed to have 120 days of storage capacity but probably do not, fill up. Each of the last 3 years, I have personally received calls telling the homeowners that they must immediately turn on their sprinkling systems in the middle of rainstorms because the ponds were within 1 or 2 days of spilling. These last 3 weeks, our emergency sprinkling system has been in operation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, rain or shine, except when your staff ordered the county to shut everything off last Friday. The situation now is this. The system needs to dispose of between 10 and 15 million gallons of recycled water in the next 3 weeks in order to bring the flows back into balance heading into the summer. Even if we find a way to do that, the problem will reoccur every year until the proper acreage is in place. I ask for your help in three things. First, we need immediate approval for discharge on additional acreage, or there will absolutely be a spill. Second, the developer, the county, and the agency staff need to be given a deadline for completion of the application pending for new WDRs for Las Palmas. I have been working on this now for over 2 years. Each new WDR for the system needs to have specific language which will protect the homeowners and their operations. I have some thoughts about that, obviously, and I'm prepared to work with your staff as this has been on my plate now for over 2 years.
Mr. Taylor, the problem is both inadequate storage and reduced acreage.
Yes.
Now it says here you're a homeowner. Is there a board?
There are 12 of them.
12 of them.
Yes. And we have 12 homeowners associations.
and I am president of one in phase two.
There's 12 homeowners associations.
Unbelievable, yes.
Okay, and how many homes are there?
There are 1,000 homes.
1,000 homes.
And you don't have a master homeowners association?
I am president of the master association in phase two. We own the parkway and the adjacent parking strips as well as the pool. We do not own the treatment plant. We do not control the ponds. The only thing we have is grass. We spray as much water as we can. But if you ran your dog on it, he would disappear.
Well, who owns the treatment plant? One of the other?
Cal-Am. And your WDR is issued to the County of Monterey. So you have a treatment operation and a spray field operation conducted by two separate entities who really don't communicate, by the way, and your WDR is in a third entity. It's impossible for us.
Is our staff looking into this?
They have been for 2 years.
Oh, we have been for 2 years.
Well, it's quite a story. Actually,
it sounds fascinating.
It sounds like
I wish we had the time.
It sounds like a story.
I don't know if you're not aware of it, Mr. Taylor, but you talked about the possibility of a spill. Actually,
I know there was a backup into the plant a week and a half ago, and I know that River Road was inundated last week.
Well, there was actually an illegal discharge to the river.
There may have been. I will tell you that 3 weeks ago when I was asked to turn the irrigation system on in my capacity as president of the Homeowners Association in Phase 2, I refused. And the county overrode me, turned it on themselves.
Well, at any rate, the county and Cal-Am, I guess it was, and my understanding is Cal-Am is a recent, recent acquisition.
I believe they purchased from the county about 3 years ago.
Okay. At any rate, it was a situation where it came down to should they let the ponds overflow with allowing the levees to break, or should they have a controlled discharge to the river? And we were actually asked if that was okay, and we said, no, it's not okay. We can't authorize that. However, we agreed that the lesser of the two evils would be the discharge to the river, and told them that they needed to monitor that, and they would be subject to enforcement action, which we have in development now. But it is kind of a mess, as Mr. Taylor was saying, because of the mixed responsibility, the 12 homeowners association that is responsible for these different irrigation areas, and the apparent inadequacy of the storage and irrigation areas.
Yes. And it's been the continuing. I've been involved with the Homeowners Association for 3 years, and I will tell you that this is the third consecutive year that the same problem has arisen. In 2003, I was called on December 23 and told that the ponds would spill the next day if the homeowners did not do something. And coincidentally, each of the three times that I've been called to take emergency action, it's been raining outside. And I have been working with any number of members of the staff. You can imagine how difficult it was for me to contact someone on your staff on the 23rd of December to get permission to do something. It's intolerable. We have been asked to violate the permit on a number of occasions, and I finally have given up. So that's why I'm here today. We're getting nowhere.
Well, what is the treatment plant operator, what are they doing to increase their capacity? Are you saying nothing?
No, the treatment capacity is fine. It's the disposal capacity that's inadequate.
Okay.
You can't dispose of 50 acres worth of water on 26 acres worth of ground.
Yeah. Who, Mr. Taylor, who owns the spray fields?
Well, the spray fields are owned by the individual homeowners association, and we have an emergency spray field that was put in response to the emergency 2 years ago, which is an unregulated, unfenced, unprogrammed cattle field. The developer just laid some pipe on the ground and put some sprinkler heads in it, and we've been sprinkling in the cattle fields. That's the emergency field that's been going on. That's where it crossed River Road for the last 3 weeks, been on 24 hours a day.
So that cattle field's along the River Road, which would discharge into the Salinas River.
Yeah, the cattle field has these big pipes
so
that go under the road
E. coli,
out into the river.
E. coli from the, is there cattle in the field as well?
There are, yes, there have been every year, and they are there now, and one of my concerns is they're going to step on the sprinkler heads. The cattle aren't that
And
smart.
Then can I ask you why... you say you're supposed to have 41 acres of spray field in the original order, and there's only 27. Why wasn't there 41?
I don't think anyone ever came out and inspected to see that the developer was doing what he was required to do. My expectation, I've talked with Martin Fletcher, about this issue on several occasions, and he indicated to me that it was not your staff, and I don't know enough about what your staff's job is, not their job to come out and field inspect. Well, I've been listening to all the THP stuff about field inspection. Would have been nice before the development was finished if somebody came out and said, you know, you're a little short of spray fields. But we're stuck with it. And the only thing that we can do is open a big valve and let it run into the storm drain. And we're not going to do that.
Yeah, I assume now that with all the quagmire that you have, that the fix is going to be passed on to the homeowners, which to me is not
If you find
right.
Cal-Am, they're going to run off to the PUC. If you find the county, they're going to run. We're in a county service agency. They're going to pass it right on to us. And we didn't cause it. Somebody dropped the ball.
I don't know exactly what Martin Fletcher said, but I can guess that what he was referring to is that when we write the waste discharge requirements, we say you must contain your irrigation within these areas. And the board establishes that and says you can irrigate within these areas. But we don't tell them they have to put in sprinklers within certain areas. It's up to them to run their system and to meet their waste discharge
requirements. But I think it's up to us to make sure that they're running their system properly.
Well, and they haven't been, and as evidenced by the fact that they haven't been able to take care of their... They could treat the water okay, but they don't have the disposal
capacity. They don't have storage capacity. And my next question to Mr. Taylor is, how full are the ponds today?
How do I answer this? I have not been in control of our discharge, but I can tell you that there's a discharge behind my house that is probably dewatering those ponds to the tune of about 500,000 gallons a day. I didn't turn it on. No homeowner that I know of turned it on.
Are these illegal discharges?
Yeah, and our staff was out there. I don't know when that was.
It was Friday.
Was it Friday?
That's my understanding.
And nobody owns the plant, or nobody turns these things on, and nobody owns anything? I mean,
no, as I said, I think it was a combination of Cal-Am and the county that contacted us and said that they can't comply with their requirements, and could we approve a discharge of the river? And
I see. Okay.
I don't know, you know, which individuals with those agencies.
If we don't get rid of the water, we're going to have to stop flushing the toilets. Means 1,000 people are going to have to move into motels or something, and I'm not going to stand the political heat for that.
Mr. Briggs, what do we do to get this resolved as expeditiously as possible?
Good question. You know, our recourse is to enforce on the violation of the waste discharge requirements, and it's really up to the discharger. In this case, it sounds like that responsibility is spread among several entities.
Now, the discharger in the permit is County Service Agency 72.
Right, but there's this dependency on the homeowners associations, apparently, in terms
we're doing what we're told.
Well, at any rate, you can see that there's some finger pointing.
Would appropriate monetary fines be an encouragement for proper behavior?
Well, I think it
it's
going to
fall right on the homeowners.
Pardon me?
If you impose a monetary fine, it's going to go right to the homeowners. The county couldn't care less.
So I don't know enough about the details at this point. As we've talked about enforcement action that's necessary because of this illegal discharge and. But in terms of what the ultimate solution is, we don't have enough details yet to
tell you
what the magic bullet
is. Mr. Chairman, that there is an application pending to expand the acreage to close to 50 acres. There are a number of difficulties given the procedural problems with this, including a breakdown in negotiations with Cal-Am. But it's my understanding that the State Department of Health has already approved the acres that have been proposed. I believe most of the sprinkler systems are in. I can't tell the difference between purple pipe and white pipe when it's under the ground, et cetera. That's why my first request was for some type of emergency approval that we can put that acreage into operation. That would be a big help. I'm not sure it would actually solve the problem, but it would certainly get us started. The emergency spray fields that we're using right now were put into place exactly that way. It never came to your board. It was approved by the State Department of Health. It's in an open cattle field because the health department wanted to keep it away from humans. It all just boggles my mind. The spray fields those emergency spray fields that we're using are outside of the approved area in the WDR, and the first prohibition in the WDR is discharge to other than irrigation areas shown in attachment A is prohibited. So, I mean, good golly, we got to get rid of the water.
With 1,000 homes developed by one entity?
Yes.
And who's that?
Fletcher Development, or Las Palmas Ranch Development, whatever entity you want to call it.
And how many years ago?
It's been developed over the last, well, the, this, this was for the expansion of the treatment plant, I believe. The development started in 1986. Mm. So, I mean, it's no one was guarding the hen house here, and now we're holding the bag. And I just don't like having to make a decision to dispose of millions of gallons of water when I know you guys aren't going to like it.
So how do we entertain an emergency request to do
might
something?
Since the time is moving on, might I suggest we discuss it tomorrow?
Good idea.
Good idea. What?
And you're all welcome to take a field trip to see it in person,
yeah.
3 miles away.
Lori?
Well, rather than discussing it tomorrow, I don't know if there's anything in the EO report on this, because it's not on the agenda,
right.
And this is really a public comment
item. And I'd like
item.
Mr. Taylor to know.
I was going
to
bring it up in the enforcement report.
Okay.
So we can discuss it during the enforcement
right.
report?
Well, and also, Harvey Packard is our staff person who's working
okay.
on it. He's going to be here tomorrow.
Okay. Good.
So it's going to be brought up again tomorrow, Mr. Taylor.
Can you give me a four or five hour range?
What?
I have a practice to run, so I've already taken significant time
right.
away today.
Of course. What's
it? It's number 16.
Should be before lunch, don't you think?
Yeah, I'd say
should
about
be before
11.
Lunch.
I could come back at 11.
Yeah, probably after 10,
okay.
I would think, and before between 10 and 12.
I'm just trying to think what my calendar is tomorrow.
Right.
Why can't we hold that issue to make sure Mr. Taylor is
here?
Until
he gets here.
Yeah. If we tell him at 11, then...
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, we can do that.
I'll be here at 11.
Get here at 11, and then we'll break
I
that
appreciate
issue.
It.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
I'll
thank
sleep
you.
Better tonight.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. The next two speakers are kind of joined.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're Susan Clark.
I'm Barbara Schweffel.
You're Barbara.
Okay.
Okay.
Actually, let me
you
just...
You were going to give your time to Susan.
My name is Barbara Schweffel, and okay. Susan and I are neighbors, and we have approximately a four-minute presentation, which actually Susan has prepared. And we can split it, or she can do it in the 4 minutes.
That's fine.
Is that okay? We have a handout that we would like you all to have.
You've got four
okay.
minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Susan Clark Bacigalupi. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today, as long as we're on sewage. We're talking about California Utility Service, which serves the greater Toro area. I've been involved in investigating the sewage situation because there seems to be a lot more tracks and so on and so forth wanting to be hooked up to this sewer, and I've come up with some somewhat startling things and some things that I can't come up with because of access problems. So what I'm really asking is for the board to really look into this situation. California Utility Service is owned and operated by Robert and Patricia Adcock. And the course of my investigation, the first irregularity that I found was the fact that both the state and the county's records are incomplete. Where the monitoring is required, monitoring reports are not there. Where there are monitoring reports, and this was particularly prevalent in the records submitted to the state, for average flow per day and so on and so forth, say the month had 30 days, only 24 of the days were reported, and yet 30 days were used for the averaging, which brought the flow down. They're way out of compliance with the number of hookups and flow per day. Now, this can or cannot be important, as the previous speaker pointed out. And in the case of California Utility Service, it's not that important. But because of the history of the folks involved with this, the number of violations, the fact that their flow meter is not an influent flow meter, it's an effluent flow meter, the metering going to the holding ponds is not metered, so on and so forth. They're not even in the ballpark. When they, in response to the board's letter, I believe in October, and because of time constraints, I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I apologize, but I believe it was in October from Mr. Briggs, The response came back with a spreadsheet with addresses on it. These are my true and truthful hookups, so on and so forth. Well, I got a copy of it, and I went to those addresses. I also went to the addresses that weren't included. And there were many that were not included, and there were many of the addresses that were counted as a single family resident, you know, four-person household, and there were actually businesses with 60 to 80 employees. This is not correct. The monitoring system, the man has a history of inaccurate monitoring. Previous gentleman was talking about spray fields. They have, as of 2004, October, their spray field of record, I believe, is 31.5 acres. If they are doing 300,000 gallons a day, you cannot discharge, as your permit requires, leaving one-third of that spray field at rest. You cannot discharge that amount of discharge, effluent, whatever you want to call it. The math is simple. It doesn't add up. More concerning to me is the fact that I can't take grab samples from the plant. I can't take soil samples from the plant. I can't even get on the plant. We've gotten the county's attention on this in a small way. I'd like to get the board's attention on this. Something is real wrong there. I've got it in my declaration, which was handed to you. I certainly hope you read it. I have a paper that is probably 25 pages long with the technical aspect of this. But we need some help finding out what is going into the Salinas River. What are the percolation rates? What is going into the ground? And we need some help on this. Just on the reporting alone, it's so far out of whack. On some of the violations where it was admitted, oh, gee, that sample for the nitrate, coliform, et cetera, was inaccurate because I think I contaminated it. Well, if I'm the plant operator, I better damn well know whether I contaminated it or not. The last inspection that the board was on, in one of the letters, I believe it was from Mr. Briggs to Adcock, it appeared that the lab equipment was unused and dusty. There is some question as to who has been doing the lab reports. The lab processing this. And it is my understanding that Mr. Adcock has a substantial interest in that lab. I believe he recently changed labs. But that's where we're from.
Susan, we don't have a lot of time left, and I'd like to hear from staff as to what they know about this.
Okay.
So let's hold on. Mr. Briggs?
Well, actually, I know less about this one than the previous item, although I do recall the incident that you're referring to as far as the lab equipment, and that we did follow up on that as far as the use of the lab equipment, and felt there was some kind of explanation for that. And again, this might be something that Harvey Packard might be able to help us with tomorrow. Actually, Gerhard, with the enforcement report, I doubt that you have any other details since it's not your geographic area. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Scott,
I think
Phillips is the fellow.
Right.
From your
but Harvey Packard is the supervisor. So
okay.
I think we'll just have to report back to you because I don't remember any more details than the incident about the question of the lab equipment being used properly.
Mr. Chair, if I can just add a couple of comments. This location of this treatment plant is closer to the Salinas River than the one that Mr. Taylor was reporting about.
I think it straddles the river because you get the
absolutely
plant on one side and the
spray fields on the other side.
Right.
And the other issue of the lab, Mr. Adcock has run his own lab in the past, not only for his sewage facilities but also for the water companies that he's had in the past, which he no longer has because of federal lawsuits against him and falsifying reports on his lab work for his water systems. Now, I can't address the sewage test, but I think that they have raised some questions that the staff really needs to look at, and I surely don't want us to get into a situation that we have a major catastrophe because it is right alongside the Salinas River, and these folks would be almost in the same position as Las Palmas if something is not done. How did you come up with your violations of flows? Did you actually go out and count the hookup?
House to house.
And
business to business, address to address, the entire area.
Okay, what number of did you use for a discharge per household?
I've got a spreadsheet that was included in that stuff where I've used various different numbers. So in case a debate came up on whether there were low-flow toilets, which in this particular area is not a low-flow toilet area. This is an old area. So there's numbers for 350 gallons a day, 275 gallons a day, 300 gallons per day, and it's all totaled up down at the bottom.
Well, needless to say, you know, when you hand us the document, you know, and you're trying to, we're trying to listen to you, and we're not all speed readers, and it's very hard to read all this. That's why I was asking the question. But I do thank you for bringing this to our attention.
If I may make one more comment, because you brought up the Department of Justice situation, which that decision came down in April of 2004 with regards to Mr. Adcock's water company. And as Mr. Jeffries referenced on that, what we are questioning is basically the same thing that the Department of Justice convicted him of, false reporting out of compliance with 95-23. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. We have... Well, we'll go to...
Anyway, in conclusion, we'll have to come back with some more information.
Talk about this
for you.
Tomorrow.
And also some follow-up after tomorrow in terms of evaluating this information.
Okay.
Okay.
And what time would that be, or what number would that be?
Well, I didn't intend to bring this one up. I did intend to bring the other one up. But actually, I made a note that for Harvey Packard to provide whatever information he can tomorrow. So that could be about the same time, about 11 o'clock.
Thank you.
Mr. Briggs, can I ask you to, once you do an investigation and talk to Mr. Packard, can we send a letter to these folks to let them know what we're going to do or not going to do?
Maybe. It depends on what we're going to do.
Okay. Or not going to do.
Or well, not going to do.
I'm not trying to be flippant there.
I understand, because you don't know.
And also with enforcement actions, we don't want to advertise until we actually take the enforcement action.
Okay. How about this? Is this going to come up in the EO's report next month?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe.
Or clairvoyant.
Can they get it then?
Sure.
Get their address.
Yeah, the public information.
Yeah, yeah, let them see.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you were referring to.
The executive officer has a report as part of the agenda.
Ah.
In which he lets the board members know about things he and the staff have been working on. This item will come back to the board for informational purposes.
In our March meeting.
In our next board meeting.
And so we can send you that.
I'm asking that you be sent the status report.
That would be very much appreciated.
For this.
But is there an address here?
Well,
I have the cards here.
Yeah, we have the cards here. So,
who would you like it sent to?
72 San Venancio Road.
Barbara Schweffel or myself, either one or both.
97 or 72.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Dennis Dickerson.
While Dennis is coming to the microphone, I will point out that he is the former executive officer of the Los Angeles Regional Board, so welcome to the good region.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome. I appreciate it. Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good afternoon. And I'm appearing today on behalf of the Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc. organization that I think you're well aware of. I have recently been designated the executive officer of that organization. And I particularly wanted to come today to introduce myself to you all, even though I know some of you from the previous WQCC meetings that were held. But I wanted to give you a brief report on the status of what has been happening with the organization. And since last July, it's really been an astonishing record of accomplishment, I think. The original forming members of the board, of which there were four, have incorporated. They've submitted and received an IRS 501c3 status, various other documents that are necessary for being a legal organization in the state of California have been filed and documented as well. So the organizational construct is in place. Additionally, the Region 3 Agricultural Committee recently made nominations for the full board. Those nominations have been submitted and have been accepted. And so next week, on the 15th, the board will meet and will have its first full board meeting. Now, the initial board will be constituted of 10 members. There's one member yet from the ag community that still needs to be nominated. There are two public members that need to be nominated, and that will be a agenda item for the board meeting next week. With the end of 2004, it's recognized the work of many individuals. A lot of work went into this process. And Laura Mills and Kay Mercer, and Laura is here, are the technical program managers, and they have been working with the ag community extensively. And in addition, I can report to you that there's been a huge amount of pro bono work that's been done by a number of individuals. And I think that total, although it's not final yet, is at least approaching $30,000 of professional time, if not more. I would like to note that the monitoring program has commenced. Larry Walker & Associates has been contracted, although the contract terms are still in negotiation. But the monitoring has commenced with that occurring the last week of January. Earlier, under Prop 40 and Prop 50, three grants were submitted to the State Water Resources Control Board under the Ag Water Quality Program. Those grants are pending, and we expect to hear within the next 2 weeks, I believe, everyone should be hearing the status of those particular grants. And it's really important, as I noted, to identify the work of various individuals, but also the regional board staff. I don't think we'd have gotten here without their efforts. In order to get the monitoring going, we had to have the QAPP approved. Your staff provided conceptual approval of that just prior to the initiation of monitoring. And another important deliverable is well underway. That's the synthetic data workshops. Those are being scheduled for March 8th and March 9th in Santa Maria and Salinas, respectively. So with that, I would like to extend the appreciation of the Board of Directors to you for your commitment, your visionary approach to dealing with the ag community in this particular effort. And I want to emphasize that we're doing something new, but it's very precedent-setting. It's very important. I think there will be challenges that we have to confront and overcome as time proceeds, but I think working together we can easily overcome those and have this be a truly model program. So I want to thank you for your time today, and I look forward really very much to the opportunity to work both with the corporation and with the regional board to make this program a success. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've asked Karen Worcester and Allison Jones of our staff to line up a time with Dennis for getting together to talk in more detail.
That'd be great, and I do have a more formal written report for you to summarize that. Thank you again.
So, Laura, how are things going? Good?
Great. Now that we have him on.
Good. Good. Okay. Good. Okay. Don Stevens, you've got 5 minutes.
And just before.
And this is our last speaker.
Mr. Stevens starts. If someone's missing a car key, I've got some here that were dropped on the floor.
I guess I can't go home.
Should I start?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a property owner in Santa Cruz with property adjacent to the University of California. And I'm here to speak to you today about their lack of stormwater infrastructure and inadequate stormwater management practices. I have started doing my homework and investigating stormwater practices up there since the announcement of the new long-range development plan for UC Santa Cruz, which includes the addition of 4.3 million square feet of building. And specifically, I have studied their 2004 mitigation monitoring report, which deals with mitigation specified in the 1988 environmental impact report for their last phase of development. And when you go through that 2004 report, it's quite amazing that most of the mitigations recommended were not implemented, and it was in all cases, 23 times they used the terms not fully funded, lack of funding, pending identification of funding, fiscal restraints, and budget constraints. These terms were used 23 times in this report. The stormwater on the campus is diverts polluted water, which is in excess of the your Water Board guidelines, stormwater from roads and parking lots directly into groundwater through sinkholes that are part of the rare and fragile karst environment. And some of the stormwater goes into creeks and gulches, and in numerous cases, stormwater diversions have been carving new substantial gullies. Specifically, according to the 2004 report prepared by UCSC and attached to this letter that I'm going to give to you, samples contained hydrocarbon levels, pH levels, and total dissolved solid from stormwater that is transferred to groundwater through sinkholes from three parking lots that did not conform with your own guidelines. The groundwater tests of the karst environment occurred in only one well on the 2,000-acre campus, and no tests were conducted near sinkholes. There's been almost no documentation of baseline conditions and no formal monitoring of campus drainages and sinkholes to date, even though they are called for in the 1988 EIR. Many of the areas affected are associated with known environmentally sensitive habitats. Anyway, I have more in my letter, but my question to you is that for the new development growth and their, that they should be required, like any developer, to adhere to the federal, state, and local water board regulations before they're allowed to develop. That's my main concern because of all of the problems. It seems that they're just dumping stormwater all over the place and into sinkholes. And that since the scoping period is open now until February 25th for their new environmental impact report, I think it's important that, if possible, for you to direct staff to analyze their new master stormwater and drainage master plan and be the ones to follow up on what is really happening there, because so far UC Santa Cruz certifies their own compliance. And I don't believe they're in compliance based on my reading of their 2004 report. And there are a lot more details, but I know time is limited here. Okay. And I've attached the 2000 report for you, as well as they devote one paragraph in their new LRDP to stormwater management, and it says has almost no detail. Just says we're going to keep doing what we're doing, basically.
Okay, thank you for your comments. How do we get our universities and colleges, University of California, do they need to get a stormwater management plan?
They're in the attachment 3 to the phase 2 permits under the institutions.
Okay. And so
it's included in
here's attachment
item 26, I think.
I mean 25.
25, the stormwater summary.
Okay.
At any rate, though, I asked Chris Adair if we could have somebody make an inspection of the UC campus just in terms of the construction activity that's underway. And in terms of reviewing their management plan, you know, we could probably take a look at that as well. I don't know if anybody has already.
So what... Do they have a stormwater management plan? I didn't quite understand.
Yeah, they're covered under that. By being listed in attachment 3, they're supposed to have a stormwater management
plan. Right, we haven't received
and
it
they
yet.
Were this is one we haven't received. The attachment 3, they're called non-traditional MS4s.
And I see them in here.
Right,
now.
And there was a requirement to submit the swamps, but we haven't reviewed any of those, and none of those have obtained permit coverage yet. And I think Jennifer's going to talk about it more in her report tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Right, we have a contract with We have a contract with Tetra Tech to review our attachment 3 stormwater management plans because there's so many of them, and they have a stack of them right now. And I'm not sure if Santa Cruz is in there or not, but they still should have a construction permit.
But there was also no stormwater management plan in 1988, and but there was references in the EIR to identified problems that should be addressed, and they violated all of those in the sense that none of them were most of them were not implemented, and they're using budgetary constraints as an excuse.
Okay.
Yeah, in 1988 there was no requirement from this board.
From this
water
board,
quality law,
but
to
in the
have
EIR,
a management plan.
In
right.
the EIR, there was.
These requirements are new.
I was going to bring this issue up tomorrow, so thanks for bringing it up. But I think the big issue is not just their problems today, but they have huge growth plans. It's something like 20,000 additional students that they plan to bring on, which is definitely a burden for the campus, but also for the near campus areas. And I think what he's asking about is not just to deal with the current problems, but we don't do anything, it's going to get a lot worse. And now is the time to review this EIR that they're working on. Yeah. And
I mean, I'm just afraid of them approving the development, because they get to approve their own development, and not have your board weigh in on these problems before the approval, because that's what happened last time, and they never have done any. I mean, no developer, even for a small two-house residential development, can build without solid plans in place for stormwater management.
Okay. We'll take this up tomorrow then.
Actually, Howard says that Kimberly has received the stormwater management plan from them. She's reviewing it now. She'll be here tomorrow. So.
Okay.
Maybe she can add something.
So I hope that you will stay on top of this, and because this is such a huge project, that you will be able to devote some staff time and pay attention
to
it.
Well, I would encourage you to help us.
I'll
stay
do it
on top of it.
I will be glad to do all I can on this issue, because
yeah, and if you have photographs of things that you
we
want
do have photographs. Gail doesn't have time to speak.
Not right now,
okay.
But submit it to staff and make copies,
right.
And we're very interested.
With Kimberly Gonzalez, should
yeah,
I? Okay.
Give it to staff and ask that it be distributed to the board.
Okay, I will submit this to you guys.
I just have
one copy, but thank you very much
for
your time. And
thanks for coming tonight.
Yes.
Can I just ask one fast question? You mentioned that the scoping period for the EIR is open until February 25th.
Correct.
Are they actually doing scoping, or is there a draft EIR that's being circulated for comment?
They're just doing scoping for the draft EIR, and I've also enclosed a copy of my letter to you to submit for the scoping record, so I'm hoping to get the water board tied into the EIR process to make sure that regulations are not, well, that they are followed. Thank you.
Okay. Kevin Collins is our last speaker. We think. Right? Yeah.
I'll be as brief as is absolutely possible. I'd like to reiterate, I'm losing my mind. Anyway, I'd like to agree with Sarah Newkirk and her objections to the policy of allowing timber operations to proceed before a permit has been issued. This is a letter written by a very renowned hydrologist. Most recently, to my knowledge, he worked on the TMDL for Lake Tahoe. And in it, he describes just one of the processes by which erosion can be rates can be increased, that being debris slides from removal of trees on steep slopes, and they have to do with loss of rooting strength and rainfall interception. And so, anyway, I'd like to make this letter available to you. There's lots of scientific literature around that can make the point that there's more to erosion than skid trails and road construction from logging.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Any other comments before we end? Yes, Dr. Bowker.
Just a logistical comment. Do
yes.
we have to break this stuff down? Could somebody else come in? Or is this stuff going to stay here?
It's going to stay here, but we have to guard it.
Okay.
Until it's locked up.
Okay. So we'll.
So
do you need help putting it somewhere?
Oh, no, thanks.
All right.
We'll take care of
that. And we'll reconvene in the morning.